On today's show, we talk with entrepreneur and Shark Tank investor Damon John. You're listening to the Eagles Talent Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Eagles Talent Speakers Bureau, for speakers who inspire, educate, and entertain. You can find us online at eaglestalent.com. Remember, you can listen to our podcast on our site, eaglestalent.com, or subscribe to it on iTunes by simply typing Eagles Talent in the search. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Eagles Talent Podcast, and I'm your host, Sheldon Senek. Damon John is a personification of the American dream. From humble beginnings, his clothing brand, FUBU, took off into a multi-million dollar company. Damon is also one of the investors of the hit ABC television show, Shark Tank. I recently sat down with Damon as he looked back on his own success and shared some of his tips for future entrepreneurs. Damon John, welcome to the Eagles Talent Podcast. So happy you can join us today.
Thank you for having me.
Damon, much of America knows you as one of the Shark Tank investors on the hit television show Shark Tank. When you were presented with this idea to be on the show, did you initially buy into the idea, or and also did you believe it would be as successful as it has been?
Well, first of all, I did not buy into the idea, and I think that that worked in my benefit, and it wasn't that I was posturing, but when they called me, and I always had I've gotten a lot of offers to be on television, but they weren't really the type of programs that I thought I would be on, that I would like to be on. You know, reality shows were showing my home life, my family,
right. And
all the stupid chaos that goes on within people's lives where, you know, I actually despise that aspect of reality shows.
Right.
So, first of all, I said no, and then I realized it was a business show, and I liked the idea. And then when these guys said, you know, you got to use your own money to invest, I thought these guys were crazy. I said, I'm supposed to get paid to be on TV, not pay to be on TV.
Right.
So I gave it some thought, but, you know, I'm really big into brands and leveraging relationships and working with great people. And then I looked and I did my due diligence on the show itself.
Mm-hmm.
And when I found out that it was a show that was existing in Japan and then in London and then in Canada, and it was doing really, really well. And this show would be produced by Mark Burnett, number mm-hmm. one reality producer in the world.
Right.
And he doesn't do the small reality shows. He does things, you know, like
goes for all. Yeah.
Right. When I realized it was with Sony, and then it was also being distributed by ABC Television, it was on ABC. I said, it doesn't get any better than that. So I said, okay. I said, I'll do the show.
How difficult is it to walk down the street and not have an offer for the next great product?
I probably get offered and pitched about 100 times a day.
Jeez.
And usually, you know, a lot of times I'll listen to somebody or I'll give them a contact on or go to DamonJohn.com and pitch me.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, I'm in the airport. I'm going to the men's bathroom and the guy doesn't even, you know, wash his hands and he's trying to shake my hand and give me an offer. So sometimes it can be overwhelming. But you know, when you're in the public light and you're you know, you are helping people to some extent, you know, it's a given.
You're from Hollis, Queens. Would you mind painting a picture of your childhood and maybe how that helped to shape you?
All right, well, Hollis, Queens is a suburb of New York City, and Hollis, Queens is really known for rap music. Now, rap music started in the Bronx,
mm-hmm.
and it became really popular, but then a guy that everybody knows named Russell Simmons was from Hollis, Queens, and he went and got his brother's run, you know, from Run DMC, and then he signed to his record label Salt and Pepper and LL Cool J. So Hollis, Queens became the bed kind of hip-hop, commercial hip-hop.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up there, middle-class, you know, middle-class neighborhood, prior to that, all we really saw growing up when we were hanging out in the streets or playing stickball and stuff were mainly the people that were up to no good who were around in the daytime with the fancy cars.
Right.
And, you know, not realizing that the everyday middle class hardworking person would men and women would get up 6 a.m, go to work and come home late at night and, you know, cook dinner, take care of their families. But those weren't the people you idolized in the neighborhood. You idolized the people that you saw the most with the women or the men in the fancy cars. Then all of a sudden, the environment changed. Russell Simmons started driving around those fancy cars, and we started, and half our friends, LL Cool J, Salt and Pepper, they started showing us pictures of them in Europe and in, you know, in Asia, and standing on a stage and a million people singing their songs and seeing that you can actually make a living off of entertainment and doing something you love. So I think what happened was we all started to aspire to be in the entertainment field. And when this new music of hip-hop came around, there wasn't only, hip-hop wasn't something you did, it was something you lived. It came out, they started becoming words that we currently use as Ebonics, and they started to be a way to dress. And then I started to want to get into dressing the people of hip-hop. And that's basically the environment that was around and the energy. It was just really a great time.
So really, music has been such an influence on your brand and products.
Absolutely. Music is my first love. I think that music is, I think it's influential in all of our lives. I think music is the soundtrack to our lives. And
sure.
We can name some very specific songs, and you can either say that was a very joyous time in your life or a specific person you think about or a specific feeling. So music evokes so many emotions, and that is what made me want to create a uniform, create a look, a passion, a feel for somebody to adorn their body while listening to music. So traditionally, as a designer, I've done a lot of things that have inspired artists to make some of the best songs of their career, and artists who have made some of the best songs of their career have inspired us to design something that we looked at as them wearing or what was inspired from this music.
You write in your first book, Display of Power, you write, "I get my discipline, my focus, and my drive from my mother. Like a lot of boys from the neighborhood, that's where it begins and ends for me." And then you also go on to write, "She made me a promise that my appearance was important to me. She told me that if I kept up my grades in school, she'd do whatever she had to do to keep decent clothes on my back so I could have my self-respect." How much of an impact did your mother have on you as an entrepreneur?
Well, first of all, an enormous impact, and even maybe I wrote that book, The Split Power, maybe about 5 years ago. And, you know, when you're writing a book, you know, when I can have an interview with you and we only have limited time, but when you're sitting there for hours upon hours with a writer and you say, well, my mother had a certain impact, and they go, why? How?
Right.
They'll keep going so deep that you'll hit chords in your body that you never realize, wow. Why? So I always knew Ma was a great influence, but then I started to realize that I kind of followed her steps. Everything she did while I was growing up, I kind of emulated later on in life, from side jobs to very specific things as being a taxi cab driver and other things like that. But the good thing about Mom is she always was a visionary, and she was very disciplined. I was not a spoiled kid, but she always stuck to her word. And, you know, we had agreements. You know, we had almost like adult agreements. Listen, you do good in grades, you do this and that, you know, I'll make sure that you're okay, even if I have to go out and get a second and third job to do that. But then you have to work twice as hard to accomplish what you need.
Right.
And it resonated well with me. You know, there's many lessons I learned from her.
Right. When you first began your company, FUBU, what were your expectations? And at what point did you start to think, hey, there's real potential in this?
Well, initially the expectations, you know, I really started FUBU in 1989, and I closed FUBU three times, failed three times. And by 1992, I brought my other three partners in, and now we had more money to fail with. So we, you know, we kept trying, and our hopes were just to keep dressing people and being able to pay for ourselves to go on these tours and hang out with these artists and live this beautiful life, because we weren't rappers, we weren't singers or dancers. And in the best scenario, we would maybe have enough money to have a boutique or something where we would kind of run it owner-operators, and we'd have enough money to feed our families. The level where I really felt that I may be onto something was maybe about, you know, there's certain levels. Maybe like 2000, 2001, I felt, wow, FUBU's going global, and I think that we're onto something. Maybe about 2004, 2005, when I started to say, okay, you know, the brand is taking its bumps, its hits, it's diminished in some areas, but it's flourishing in others. And this actually is a global and a brand, a global brand, a recognizable brand that there will always be some form of business to be done with it. As well as in the past 20 years, I've learned enough knowledge of the business to keep moving forward in the same area of fashion and having other businesses.
So when someone is presenting on Shark Tank, what matters most to you, the product or the entrepreneur, or, and maybe the entrepreneur's ability to make more products?
Well, there's several different reasons, and everybody on Shark Tank, I've noticed all the sharks are attracted to various methods of investment. But what I've noticed fully is that every entrepreneur possesses about three qualities. First of all, they're a great brand themselves. We believe in them. So that's first and foremost. You can't, if you don't trust the person, you don't want to believe in anything else he's saying. The next thing is that they can give the information in a short time span accurately. And the third thing is that they have a product that is scalable. If all three of those things don't matter, don't work, the only thing that ever throws a wrench into it is if the person has, well, also, excuse me, about the product being scalable, sales is part of that product being scalable.
Especially if you're putting your own money into it, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Well, you know, it sales in one aspect or another. It's either the fact that they went out and sold a little bit of stuff in a short amount of time, or from a licensing aspect, they did all their due diligence, they got it all together, and now they're ready to go out and sell it as a license to a corporation or something of that nature. The only thing that ever puts all that out of whack is if somebody has an unbelievable patent. You know, something that they've created that it is the best thing in the world, but we don't like the person. They don't have the accurate answers. They don't have any sales. So those are the times you'll see some really aggressive offers like, listen, I'll give you $3 million, but I'm firing you the next day, and I want 100% of it.
Right.
You know?
What have you learned about branding that perhaps you didn't know when you began as a young entrepreneur?
I've learned that branding is purely about the person that is putting out the brand. You know, let's look at some, you know, and this is actually one of the reasons why I almost did not go on the show, because I was advising the Kardashians at a certain time when they were coming to New York with their television show. But let's look at the Kardashian family. Beautiful girls, great mother, great people. But what are they known for? There's plenty of beautiful people. There's plenty of smart people. They're not necessarily singers. They're not, you know, they're not inventors. They're not, you know, financial, you know, advisors.
Right.
They're not real estate moguls. But they are, I would say Kim Kardashian is one of the number one Googled people in the world.
Yeah.
So it's all about positioning. It's all about branding. It's all about being strategic about it, having a vision, having a goal, because I always say you cannot hit a target that you cannot see. And it's all about following that discipline and going out there and doing it and having drive. And you have to mix all that together to be, you know, a great brand.
And on that, do you think, do you feel customers want to belong to brands more and more?
Absolutely. Everybody, by nature, you know, people are like pack animals, you know,
right.
You want to be part of a movement. That's all you're selling to somebody. There's actually no, there's nothing really new that's invented. It's only a new form of delivery. And people want to feel like they're part of a movement. And we've seen that, you know, obviously in the inner city where you can tell that it's not, it's at nobody's advantage to be part of a gang. But, you know, the kids get part of a gang. We've seen that people become part of cult followings. You know, we've seen people become a part of any kind of brand, you know. So people are, they want to be part of a movement. You have to be able to sell them that movement. Now, I don't say that in a way of sell them something that's not true and not accurate. And when, you know, in the time and day and age where we're at now, where it's a lot of transparency due to social media, the easiest thing to sell is the truth. And if you're selling them anything else, you're going to get hurt. So,
right.
if you're accurate and you are consistent with what your brand is, you will find people and followers and pilgrims.
Yeah, you know, you really bring up something interesting, you know, social media. I think people can really see right through when you're not being honest with them. It's not like the old days of just putting up a billboard and telling us what to think. You know, people really...
Yeah, make and they will come or no longer exist.
Yeah.
Well, you know, because you can put up something now. You and I can spend a $10 million campaign doing something, but one disgruntled person in the mailroom who has evidence that you think differently can put out a tweet and you're dead.
Isn't that true? Something else I believe that, back to your mother just for a second. Your mother said, your day job will not make you rich. You got to do your homework. So, you know, I've listened to you speak to younger groups as well as corporate groups. Would it be fair to say that message is really universal?
I absolutely think so. I think that, you know, you can be an entrepreneur in somebody's corporation. Yes, can you be rich if you're doing a very technical position? You know, you're a doctor or a lawyer, so I don't want kids to get a mixed signal.
Mm-hmm.
But even as doctors or lawyers, you don't. It's your homework that is going to even help you more in the current position you're in to accelerate, even within a corporation. But, you know, what my mother always taught me was, listen, go to work, work your 9 to 5, and that dream of what you love and what you want to do and where you want to move after this 9 to 5, you simultaneously come home and work from 5 to 9 on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, before you know it, after a couple of years, you've put in 200, 400, 1,000 hours on a new direction in life.
Damon, when you look back, is there perhaps a single decision that you made that you think back and you think, wow, that really changed my life?
When I grew up, and a lot of my friends, as I said, was in the music industry, other of my friends had still stayed that negative side of life, and I never wanted to really be part of that, so I kind of shied away from it. And I, at one point, I think I was about 24 years old, and I said, you know, I'm so smart, I think I'm a genius, but I didn't go to college because I had to help, you know, support the house.
Mm-hmm.
I've been running around scrambling, trying to, you know, hang out on music tours and hang out with other guys also that don't have anything else, you know, better to do in life.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm at Red Lobster, and I'm serving these kids that I know were D students in school and high school, but they're coming home from college now, and they have jobs. And me, the genius, is now their waiter. I'm serving them shrimp.
Hmm.
So obviously, I'm too full of myself, or, you know, something is wrong here.
Hmm.
And at that point, I decided, you know, I created Food, and I said, you know, let me start to do something that I just love to do. I love to make these clothes. And as I told you before, the biggest reward would be, you know, having an own boutique, but I'm going to do something I love. And at that point, my entire life shifted from going out and trying to do things for the purpose of money and going out and doing things for the wrong rewards to doing something that I just love that I could have done whether I made a dime off of it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to summarize that basically, is that is the absolute only thing that every single successful person I've ever met in life have in common. And I do not think that success means money.
Mm-hmm.
Success could be being a great father, a great mother, you know, working for charities, whatever. But every single person that I know that is successful have only one thing in common, and that is they are doing something they love.
Mm. So what's next on the horizon for you? You have another season of Shark Tank?
Another season of Shark Tank. I just wrapped. We have now Mark Cuban is a permanent shark.
It's going to be fun.
Know, that is, and I happen to sit next to him. So, you know, that causes a lot of tension. You know, but listen, we just shot our last season. All the sharks are getting to know each other really well.
Right.
And that means that as we throw these we practice our mental judo and stab each other to the death. We don't take it as personal as we took it before. So,
right.
You know, so that's cool. Working on all the new companies that have acquired on the show, trying to vet them out and see which ones are viable and accurate to how they presented themselves and scalable in business. So that's really a challenge, taking on so many new green entrepreneurs and trying to make some magic with them, and running my current business, current clothing business, from FUBU to Coogee to all the other brands I own. It's a challenging time here, so kind of.
Do you get time to relax?
Yeah, I do. You know, my job, my career. I have the luxury of being everywhere, from the Emmys to the Grammys to St. Bart's. You know, working here and there. But if it wasn't for my significant other, my BlackBerry, I would not be able to relax. But now, you know, I can take my BlackBerry. She comes to me on the road. We hang out, right. And I can just, you know, email instructions out and handle a lot of business, you know?
We must be sharing the same thing, because I got one, too. It's addicting. Well, Damon John, it's not a surprise how successful you are. Not only do you have an inspiring spirit for entrepreneurialism, but you're willing to share it, and that's wonderful. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Again, I've been your host, Sheldon Sinek, and you've been listening to The Eagles Talent Podcast.